I want to take a minute before we get going with our morning scripture, but I just tell you what, I want to thank the choir. I want to thank you all for what you do. You guys have been so steadfast in your sacrifice to continue bringing great music to these services of worship, whether we've been online or whether we've been live. And today's the Sunday of hope, and so much of hope is communicated not through preaching, but through music. And this is a very important time of the year, and I thank you all for all that you're doing, and I know that everyone here agrees as well. I went to visit my mother in Louisiana about a year ago, and I don't know what it's like for those of you that make treks to visit your mom, but you go there and you always see something about their house that's odd, that you don't like, and you think, well, why does she do it that way? And I went to see my mom, and I walked in, they have a little whatnot right by the door, and there was a jar, a little mason jar like you have in Louisiana. People like to take mason jars and put all kinds of junk in them and put them all over their houses. And my mom's got that. And she had one by the front door and a little whatnot, and it was full of nails, just nasty nails, some straight, some bent, some big, some little, some rusty, some long, some short, just a bunch of nails. And I thought, that is the oddest piece of decor I have ever seen in my life. My mom has lost her mind. I don't know what it is with the nails. I said, Mom, what is it with the jar of nails? And she said, it is uncanny, son. She said, I have developed this ability to find nails. I can find them. And I go on walks, and I just come back with handfuls. I find nails everywhere I go. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd. I said, Mom, this is an old, simple, but true principle. You get what you look for. Right, you look for nails, probably not that hard to find them. She said, no. This is like a superpower. I can find nails that no one else can find. And I said, all right. So after lunch, we went for a walk, and sure enough, I noticed my mom, the whole time she's walking with me, has got her head down on the ground looking for nails. And sure enough, she found two or three of them. She'd pick them up, put them in her pocket. And I thought, while we were walking, how odd it was that when she's walking, her head is down. I said, Mom, you're going to get what you look for. Think about everything that you're missing. I said, you're missing the smiles of the other walkers. You're missing the houses, the birds, the trees. You're missing everything around you. Why are you so obsessed with looking down? She says, well, I'm after these nails. I said, well, if you're so locked in, and if it's true that you get what you look for, how about you start looking for coins? Why don't you start looking for coins instead of nails, and maybe that'd be a little bit more rewarding. And usually it's my mom giving me the wisdom. And I wasn't trying to get in her business, but I believe that simple truth in life. You get absolutely what you look for. And Thanksgiving, to me, is simply an invitation to change that which you're looking for. That's what Thanksgiving is about. There's a finite amount of time where we're asked to look for things for which we are thankful. We're asked to stop looking for the bad and to start looking for the good. It may be a narrow window of time, but that's what we're asked to do at Thanksgiving. To look for not our curses, but our blessings. Not to look for our weaknesses, but to look for our strengths. In everything, we look up to the heavens and we give God all the thanks. Now, I had two that I can remember, probably a third, a church member that I talked to just before Thanksgiving, and I said, you know, how can we have a good Thanksgiving, and what are you going to do? And they told me what they're going to do, and they said, you know, Pastor, it's going to be real hard this year to find something to be thankful for. And my hunch is a lot of you feel that way. 2020 has been an unbelievably awful year in so many respects, and they said, I don't know that I can find anything to be thankful for. Now look, I'm not denying the legitimacy of their hardships. I'm not denying that 2020 has been a crummy year, but I told these church members the same thing that I told my mom. They probably thought I was getting in their business as well. I said, here's the deal. You get what you look for. If you look for something for which to be thankful, you will find it. And not only will you find one thing, you'll find multiple things. And those things will begin to expand, but you have to be laser focused on something for which you were thankful. Now, this isn't just self-help. This isn't just me talking. If you look back in the oldest pages of the Old Testament, you find Proverbs. In the 11th Proverb, in the 27th verse, you find a guy named Solomon. Solomon, who a lot of us kind of look at and think, well, that'd be a nice way to live. Solomon had a lot of money. History tells us he was the wealthiest person that's ever lived. History also tells us he was, short of Jesus, the wisest person who has ever lived. And he gets to the end of his life. He had made a lot of money, a lot of power, a lot of influence, family, a lot of adventure. But he had made a lot of mistakes. And he decided to evaluate his mistakes and write them all down so that future generations might not make the same ones. I love dipping into the Proverbs, and this is what the 11th Proverb says. If you search for good, you will find favor. But if you search for evil, it'll find you. Doesn't get any simpler than that. You know what that means? You get in life what you look for. If you look for good, you're going to find good. If you look for bad, guess what? Not only are you going to find bad, but it's an open invitation for bad to find you. That's what Solomon said. He looked, I've discovered a lot of things in my life, but looking back on my life, I learned that if you look for good, you will find good in abundance. And if you look for evil, if you look for trouble, if you look for problems, if you look for shortcomings, if you look for deficits, you will find them. And not only will you find them, but they will come looking like a heat-seeking missile for you. And we live in a day and age where the primary value seems to be looking for the bad. We want to identify the bad. It's like we traffic exclusively in the currency of criticism. There is something about criticizing and pointing out the negative, pointing out the bad, that seems to validate who we are and makes us feel a little better. It's almost like we're teapots, right? Every now and then we got to release a stream of complaints, a stream of criticism to somehow help us deal with the pressure and the frustrations of everyday life. When you do this, you're given an open invitation. You and I give an open invitation to the negative things in life, not only to find them, but they will come looking for you. If you look for the bad, you will find the bad. But the converse is true. When you look for the good, you will find the good. And one of the best ways to change how you feel about anything, your job, environments, the world, culture, your spouse, one of the best ways to change about how you feel is to change what you're looking for. You ever notice that when you're in a good mood, most of what you see seems to be pretty good? When you're in a joyful mood, most of what you see around you seems to be pretty joyful. When you're in a bad mood, you look around, it seems like nothing's going too well. You know these kind of people. Sometimes we are these kind of people, filled with fear and doubt and nothing but misery in your life and nothing but negativity. It's all around. The world's falling apart. It's bad news around every corner. And this is bad, and that's bad, and they're bad, and this is bad, and it's not getting better, and what are we going to do? And it's gloom, and it's doom, and it's despair. And on the other hand, you got the person filled with faith, blessing, positive expectations. They just look. They wake up every day, and they look for the opposite. And these are the kind of people that in the middle of a recession, they think it's the best time in the world to try to start a new business. They just look like that. They look for the good. And I was so inspired in the earliest days of this pandemic, way back in March, which seems now like a lifetime ago, when we had to first shut the church down. I'll never forget that first Sunday we made a decision to shut the church down and to keep away public worship. I was devastated. I thought, we can't shut the church down. And one of my young associates, Matt Tuggle, is so gifted. He came in my office. He said, look, well, you got to get positive about this. He said, we can look at this one of two ways. We can look at it as bad, we're shutting the church down, or we can look at this as a golden opportunity to get away from the walls of the church and go reach people. Because he said, I'm telling you, this is what he said, I won't forget. He said, people are going to be looking for God more than ever. If this thing gets bad, that was back in March. If this thing gets bad, people are going to be looking for God more than they ever have. Now, that's someone that was looking for the positive. You get what you look for. And if that's true, and if Solomon is right, if you get what you look for, then wouldn't it make sense to start looking for what you want to see? But you got to kind of inventory your psyche and your soul and say, what is it I want my life to look like? And then you start looking for it. What is it that makes me happy? Then you start looking for those things. What is it I would like to do? You start looking for those things. You see a great example of this in the first chapter of John. Jesus, the first recorded words, this is interesting, the first recorded words of Jesus that he ever said, what are you looking for? He turns, he looks at a couple of his disciples, he says, what are you looking for? What are you trying to see? The first thing that Jesus asked of the people around him, says, I want you to think about your life, your relationships, and I want to know what it is that you're looking for. Because when you identify that and you get laser focused on looking for it, you're not going to eliminate the bad, but you sure will find the good. You want to live a more happy, a more positive life, you start looking for the good in others. You start looking obsessively for the beauty in the world around you. You look for the possibilities rather than the impossibilities. You look for positive things in a world that just demands that we be negative. I'm telling you, you'll be surprised at what you see. You'll be surprised at the handful, not of nails, but of good things. And you can put them in that mason jar in your heart and just let them grow. And I think there's about three, probably more, but there's three categories I can promise you that if you will start living like this and you'll take Solomon seriously, that in life you get what you look for, you'll make a difference in these categories. The first one's you, ourself. Sometimes I see people looking for things that aren't very good within their own soul. If I were to ask you to complete the statement, I am, those two words, I am, what would you put behind those? I am strong or I am weak? I mean, if you were really honest with yourself, what do you put behind those words? I am healthy, I am bold, I am brave, I am creative, or do you say, no, I'm unattractive, I'm clumsy, I'm no good, I'm inadequate. We make a mistake. We think, I'm just not talented. We look in a mirror, we say, I am old. The words that you put after those two words, I am, will determine an enormous amount about your future. I am so average. You get in traffic, the first thing you think is, I am so unlucky. Solomon says, what follows the I am will come looking for you. It is an open invitation. When you say, I am clumsy, clumsiness comes looking for you. You're giving it an invitation to take over your life. You're giving it permission to enter into how you live. We get to choose. When you say, I am blessed, you're giving an open invitation for blessing to come looking for you. When you say, I'm talented, you're giving an open invitation for talent to identify itself in you. When you get up in the mornings and you start looking for the good things, you take your head space, you take your heart space, you start looking for the positive. It is amazing how they come looking for you. How many people, though, do you know start the day looking for the worst? You walk up that mirror in the morning, you've been sleeping all night, you got bedhead, you got nothing but wood, you look in that mirror and you think, I am old. All right, I am decrepit, I am wrinkled, I am no longer attractive. It is an open invitation for those things to rush into your life. Now look, I don't buy into the prosperity gospel, but I believe what Solomon said is true. You get what you look for. And if you're looking for bad things in your own soul, not only will you find them, but they will come looking for you. But what if you just woke up and you decided to carry yourself? You decided to carry yourself throughout the day as if you were someone that was custom, exclusively designed and built by the God of the universe. You might go through the day a little bit differently. I am bold. I am attractive. I am a child of the living God. Wouldn't your life be a little bit different if you started looking for the good things? You're not a mistake. God custom designed you. You started treating yourself like that. It is amazing what you will find. The second area I think this is practical, and I see it all the time, is in our relationships. When you look for the bad in relationships, that's what you're going to find. When you look for the good in relationships, that's what you're going to find. It happens every day. If we believe people are kind and thoughtful, it is like we see traits in them that are, in fact, kind and thoughtful. When we more readily notice all their negative traits, all their shortcomings, all their deficits, it's amazing how selfish we think they are, how awful we think they are. We have our beliefs confirmed. You get what you look for. I get asked all the time, sermon illustrations. They say, Paul, how do you come up with the sermon illustrations? And they're not all good, but how do you come up with the sermon illustrations? You know how I come up with sermon illustrations? I look for them. I mean, I walk around with a little notebook in my back pocket. I am looking. My radar is up all the time. I would never find a sermon illustration if I were not intentionally looking for it. Whatever it is you're focused on, that's what expands in your life. In your relationships, it's the same thing. You think about what it's like in marriage. Sometimes marriage gets a little bit old, gets a little bit comfortable. You've been down the road many, many times. Things get a little bit tense. It's amazing how quickly we start looking for the negative. We start looking for the negative. Every interaction seems to confirm what we believe about that person in the first place. Oh, I knew it. They're lazy. I knew it. They're manipulative. I knew it. They're controlling. Then we start using words like he always, she never. You think about the language that we use. That's just a mirror reflection of us getting what we look for. It's like we have tunnel vision and we totally miss the wonder of the whole person. That which is a part of them that's beautiful. The strengths, their talents, their virtues, their gifts, their graces, respect and love. Remember being a teenager? Falling in love, maybe for the first time, everybody thought it was silly. Yeah, I mean, I'd bring a girl home, introduce her to my mom, dad, stepdad, whole family. I'd be all giddy, and they'd say, oh, here he goes again. Paul's looking at her through, you remember what they called it? Rose-colored glasses. You remember that? Anybody ever tell you you're looking at life through rose-colored glasses? Now, that was a term that was derogatory, right? That meant you were somehow biased. It had overtones suggesting that when you look through life with rose-colored glasses, you were really out of touch with reality. I got to tell you, the older I get, the more I think it's accurate what I saw through rose-colored glasses. You choose to look for the good in the other. Try this experiment. We can do this right now. You can do it on home if you're watching online. Just do this. Scan this room for 10 seconds. Scan this room for 10 seconds and make a mental note of everything that you see that's blue. Go. Now, I want everybody to close their eyes just for a minute. Just close your eyes. And I want you to think about everything in here that you saw that was pink. You probably can't think of very much, right? Of course not. You were so busy focusing on the blue that you didn't identify the pink. I'm telling you, one of the best ways to foster a rosy attitude is to look through life through rose-colored glasses. Don't be afraid to put them back on. It is amazing how much you'll start to enjoy your relationships. Will it change the other person's bad behavior? Probably not. But what you look for expands. What if we begin to scan the people in our lives, not for their deficiencies, but for all the way that God's graced them with gifts? What would it be like if that began to expand? We see this with ourselves. We see this with our relationships. And then finally, it's real simple. I think we get what we look for when it comes to looking for God. I mean, we got to look for God, don't we? But like Solomon says, you look for God, God will come looking for you. So often we don't see God because we're not looking for God. And you know how this works. Believers can see evidence of God everywhere they look. Everywhere they look, that's God, that's God, that's God. I don't know if that's God or not. But people that look for God, they tend to find God, they tend to see God. Non-believers, they tend to look around and everything's just coincidence. That breath you just breathed in, that's just what happens to be in front of you at the moment your lungs intake oxygen. No. That's the breath of the Creator. And the best example of this, I think, is Jesus himself. In John chapter 12, Jesus is frustrated because he knows he's got to go to the cross, and he's troubled, and he wants to find God. Now my soul is troubled, and what should I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, it is for this reason that I have come to this hour, Father, to glorify your name. Now, this is the important part. Then a voice came from heaven. The voice said this, I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. And this is right here. This is the pivot point right here, John 12, 29. The crowd standing there heard it. Some said it was thunder. Others said it was the voice of God. An angel had spoken to him. Now, I've always wondered, I've read that passage dozens of times. Why did some people hear the same voice and they interpreted it as thunder? Here comes another storm. And other people heard angels. Other people heard the voice of God. Why did some attribute the same sound to thunder and others to the holy? I'm telling you, you spend enough time with that one simple line of scripture, you will discover that as human beings, we're not nearly as objective as we think we are. More often than not, our response to God's work in life reveals our hearts. If we're inclined to believe in God, we see God's hand in almost every situation. We want to give God the thanks. We want to give God the praise. We want to give God the credit. But when we're not looking for God, it's more often than not thunder. It's just the mark of another storm coming in our life. And maybe if I were God, maybe if you were God, we'd do it a little bit differently. But this is the way that God seems to work. Sometimes God shows just enough of himself for some people to believe, but just enough of himself for other people to be a little bit ambiguous and think, maybe that's not God, maybe that's just coincidence. Once again, we find scripturally that you get what you look for. My hunch is some of you are in the middle of a spiritual drought. You're in a spiritual drought. It's been a while since you felt ignited spiritually. It's been a while since you felt like you've heard from or you've seen God. It's dry. It's spiritually dry. It's desperate. The fabric of your soul begins to crack and to dry, and you begin to think, I haven't seen God in a while. You get what you look for. And sometimes a drought's the best place to do it. I remember years ago when we went to Israel, one of the most fascinating experiences that we had was when we were on the Sea of Galilee. And when you come off the Sea of Galilee and you have a wonderful little worship service right there where Jesus walked, and you come out and there's a museum there, and you go to the museum today and they have what's called the Jesus boat. You know, these were two archaeologists that found a boat that was built in the first century. We don't know if Jesus actually used the boat or not, but we know it came from the time of Jesus. They've taken the boat, they surfaced it, they preserved it, and you can see it in a museum. But as I sat there in the museum reading about it, what I discovered was it was two archaeologists that were so thrilled that the Sea of Galilee was in the middle of a three-year drought. And they said, you know, the best time to look for artifacts is in the middle of a drought. Let's go looking for things. And so they began to walk the banks of the Sea of Galilee, and sure enough, they discovered the Jesus boat. And the point is, sometimes God is doing his best work in my life and in yours, slap in the middle of a drought. Right in the middle of those moments where we feel the spiritually the driest, the most cracked. We can't find God. We can't see God. But for those of us that choose to stay the course and believe that I know we're in a drought, but maybe God is doing his best work right at this moment, it is amazing how you'll get what you look for. And you'll start to see the way God is working with you, working with us, working with the world, giving us hope. Today is a Sunday of hope. Sometimes we lose hope. I would contend we lose hope because we stop looking for hope. Hope is there when we look for it. You think about the life of Jesus. He got what he looked for. In a hated tax collector, Jesus saw a promising disciple. In a weak, cowardly, vacillating Simon Peter, Jesus saw the hope of a rock. In a cup of cold water, he saw divine compassion. In a lily, he saw a glory greater than Solomon's. In a sparrow, Jesus saw the providence of God. In a grain of mustard seed, he saw the kingdom of heaven. In the face of a little child, he saw the keys to the kingdom of heaven. How can this be? Real simple principle. You get what you look for. Now, about 4 months ago, I went back to Louisiana. I walked in, I didn't pay any attention, but we had lunch. My mom said afterwards, "Can we go to the grocery store?" I said, "Sure, Mom, I'll take you to the grocery store. What do you want to do? What do you need? Maybe I'll just go get it for you." She said, "No, no, no." She said, "They have a machine up there. It's the darndest thing. You can put in your coins, and it will give you bills." I said, "Okay." And we went. And that mason jar sitting on that little whatnot by her door no longer had nails in it. But it had a bunch of coins. And so we went. We probably didn't get $4.50. But it was one of the coolest moments I've had with my mother in a long time. She took what I said to be true. And it didn't come from me. It came from Solomon. And it came from Jesus. You get what you look for. Let's pray. Heavenly gracious and loving God, we give you thanks and praise, not just on this weekend of Thanksgiving, but help us to make it a way of life, to wake up every day, not in denial that there are some really crummy, bad, awful things surrounding us. But Lord, you tell us that the light of your love is so bright, no darkness can overcome it. So help us, Lord, not to look for the darkness, because if we do, it'll come looking for us. Help us to get out of bed, to give thanks to you, to look around us for the good. Look around us for the blessings. And when we find them and when they begin to expand in our hearts, help us to look to you and give you all the thanks and all the praise. In your Son's holy and mighty name we pray. Amen.